Please welcome League of Education Voters CEO Chris Korsmo.
Good morning, everybody. How are we all doing? All right. That's what I like to hear. I hear that I gave this speech about four times in my sleep last night, so I hope it's as good as I woke up thinking it was. We'll find out. I want to say thank you to all of you for getting up so bright and early this morning. I know that there's a lot of things and a lot of places you could be this morning, dropping your kids off at work or getting those extra 300 emails out of your inbox or, God forbid, the gym. And you're here with us. And so I was just really gratified to see you all this morning. Now, this is the sixth annual League of Education Voters Breakfast, something you can thank Lisa McFarland for on your way out the door. Lisa said, we'll never do an auction, but they don't do auctions at breakfast, do they? And I thought, well, to the highest bidder they will. But 6 years, you know, it's hard to believe. I tend to mark time by milestones in my son's life. So when we started this thing, my son Max was this wild-eyed, sweet, precocious little preschooler. And now he's still sweet, but also salty, tweener, fourth grader. And Max couldn't be here this morning. Something about brain science and needing sleep. I believe that because Ruth Kagey told me to. Max is that constant reminder for me about the urgency of our work and that time waits for nothing and no one, and that he's really one of the big things that gets me up in the morning, along with the other million kids in our system who need our work and our support. Speaking of work, joining us and leading us, actually, in the work at the League of Education Voters are our visionary and just amazingly committed board of directors. And I'd like to ask our League of Education Voters Board and our LEV Foundation Board members to please stand and feel a little bit of the love that should come your way. I also want to thank the team at the League, our staff. It is their tireless effort, is their passion, their intellect, their commitment that is so inspirational to me, and I'm humbled to be a part of the work that we do with them. Would you stand and please be recognized? And so while I'm in a giving mood, it'll be a little like Thanksgiving meets the Oscars, and we're going to be glad there's no orchestra pit to shut me up. I want to take a few minutes to thank the partners that we work with in this hard work. I'd love to name you all, and I could try, and I'm going to forget some. So I'm going to lump you by coalition, and God, I hope you forgive me. But, you know, no one organization owns the intellectual capital, the moral high ground, or even the red badge of courage in this work. These are ribbons and stars, slings and arrows that we all own and we all wear proudly. It has been my great honor to work shoulder to shoulder with you, to fight hard for the right things with you, to sometimes fight with each other with you. You know who you are. I know who I am. So I want to thank the members of our K-12 Coalition, the Excellent Schools Now Coalition, the Early Learning Action Alliance, our Charter School Coalition, Act Now for Washington Students, our partners in Collective Impact, Eastside Pathways, and the Roadmap Project, our partners in the work on career and technical education, who I'm going to talk about in a little bit. You'll get a little more specific props here in a second. Our friends in higher ed and our advocates in higher ed, including College Success Foundation, the Washington Student Achievement Council, and others. And I want to thank our partners in the business sector, and the chambers, the Washington Business Alliance, the Association of Washington Businesses, the Roundtable, and all of the employers for their commitment to our kids. This is hard work, and it requires a commitment on the part of all of us to do what's right for all of our kids in Washington. So I want to thank you all and ask you, look each other in the eye and give each other a little bit of applause. And my last bit of gratitude will probably cost me a meal alone, and that is to my spouse, Christy, because she is the person who has to deal with the mess that is me at the end of the day and the opportunity that is me at the beginning of the day. She is a constant reminder to me in her from her work as a principal that our kids are not square blocks and round pegs to fit neatly into some holes that we've pre-manufactured. Our kids are lightning bolts and flower petals. And it's up to us to figure out how to support and grow and nurture those lightning bolts and flower petals into the best that our kids can be. So, Christy, thank you for all you've done for our kids and also for everything you do to support our work. Please don't make me eat dinner alone, because I did not make you stand. So for those of you new to the league, you know, we were founded 15 years ago on two really important principles. One is equity and the other is opportunity. And we decided that in order for us to provide the most opportunity in the most equitable way for our kids, that we would tackle the thorniest problems first. And that's why we've been working on education funding for the last 15 years. And by the looks of it, we're going to be at it a little while longer. But alongside many of you in this room, we worked 8 years ago to change the state's constitution so that our local levies would require only a simple majority instead of a supermajority to pass. Right on. That work has resulted in $5 billion of new money into our schools for our kids that our kids would not have seen if we hadn't done that work together. $5 billion. We know that there's a lot more work to be done in education funding, as I just said before, and we are gluttons for punishment because we are stoked. We are looking forward. We want to be at the table to help resolve the McCleary funding mess and to get our kids an equitable, stable, and ample funding solution for next year and all the years beyond. The Simple Majority Initiative was not our first attempt at an initiative. It wasn't our first rodeo, and it certainly wasn't our last. We worked alongside many of you in this room to pass a public an initiative to bring public charter schools to Washington State. And that fight was won at the ballot box, but it continues today. I want to take a minute to just ask the governor, and if you're tweeting out there, you can just go feel for it. Go for it. I just want to ask the governor respectfully to please sign SB 6194. Yeah, we have a lot of work to do for the million kids in our system. We have a funding crisis to resolve, and we are all committed to doing that. And we have 1,100 kids who have finally found their just right public education home. And we cannot take that away from those kids. So if not for those 1,100, then for the other million kids, for whom you'll send a signal that you're not going to let any kid slip through the cracks, and that all kids matter, and that all kids deserve the choice and the option and the ability to go to a school that works for them. Please sign the bill. I realize I just got uninvited to some holiday parties, and maybe we can talk about that later. You know, we've also worked outside of the K-12 arena, and it's been really important work for us. We worked with many of you in this room to ensure that low-income kids and the kids we've all come to refer to as dreamers, to ensure that they have access to college by passing the college-bound scholarships and the Real Hope Act. And to ensure that those kids are eligible and successful in post-secondary, we also work to change our high school graduation requirements to make sure that our kids get to college, and when they get to college, they don't need remediation. That work was 8 years in the making, and it is just it's just underway, and we're excited about the what the impact of that might be. On the other end of the spectrum, we worked hard to pass the Early Start Act last year. Right? Woohoo! Where's Frank Ordway? You know, we have to give our earliest learners access to high-quality preschool so that when they come to kindergarten, we've closed whatever gaps might have existed, and that they are on equal footing, and that our kids are at the same starting line. They're at the same point, and so that our kids have a fair fight. The opportunities we provide for them are equitable, and that our kids can reach their dreams because we've closed those gaps before they really began. We also worked with many of you in this room to change our discipline laws so that we keep our kids in school where they belong, and to provide our kids with more opportunities through community and technical education so that our kids can apply the learning. They can see what the relevance is in the math and science they're doing today and how they can apply it in the future. Yeah, we've done a lot of work, and we've been at it a while, but our work is far from done, and you know it, or you wouldn't be here this morning. One of the reasons we've been across the spectrum of these issues is because we look at all of our kids as if they are our kids, because in essence they are. How we treat all of our kids is a reflection on the value we place on all of our families and the state of our economy and the state of our democracy. And while we don't know every kid individually, here's some things that we do know about our kids. They all have assets. Every single one of them has talent. They are not widgets. They want to know that what they're learning has meaning, and they want us to know who they are. They want us to know their names. See, for all the difficulty that we make and ascribe to changing public education policy, it's pretty damn simple, actually. It comes down to five basic things. It's meaning and relevance. It's our kids understanding that what we're teaching them today will apply to what they're going to do tomorrow, and it is the ticket to a better life, to opportunity and prosperity. But they have to see the relevance. They need access to information about what they can do with all this learning, so they need to know what the careers are for them in the future, what the possibilities are. You can't dream about what you can't see. We have to show them. Our kids need to know what the opportunities are for them. Because they are lightning bolts and flower petals, we can't accept that a one-size-fits-all model is going to work for our kids. We have to have individual learning. We have to make sure that we're differentiating what we're doing for our kids so that they know that we see them as individuals and we're treating them that way. And as adults, we have to lean in. We have to show our kids respect, and we have to trust that they will make good decisions. We have to have high expectations for them, and we have to encourage smart failure. Because despite the fact that they may push you away, or that my salty little fourth grader sometimes will tell me, I know, I know, I know, they don't actually know. They're waiting for us, not to tell them, but to show them, to support them, and to build that bridge with them. Meaningful relationships with kids keeps more kids in schools than any other program that we can think of. And it doesn't cost anything, and it requires all of us. Five things. Let's take a little bit deeper look. And if you know me, I like analogies, metaphors. I've never met a metaphor I didn't like. I just used one there. Did you see that? Of course you did. I like to think of what we do for our kids as an elevator. And all of our kids need foundational skills. If we can get all of our kids to, say, the 15th floor, if everybody gets to the 15th floor, and all of our kids can look out that window of opportunity, and they can all see where their learning could take them. They can all see a career or job path that is exciting and relevant to them. If they all have the foundational skills to continue to make the choice to follow that path, we're doing the right thing. Unfortunately, too often, we let some kids off at the 9th floor before they've learned the math, that will actually let them get to that job that the kids at the 15th floor can see. Or we let them off at the 11th floor before they've had an opportunity to apply the learning that they have, before they get a chance to see how math really works or science really works, so that the relevance for them is not connected. There's no connective tissue there to their future. We can and must do better to get all of our kids to the 15th floor. We need to do it for at least two reasons. The first, and this involves math, and so I apologize right now because it's before 9 o'clock. In the next few years, two-thirds of our jobs will require a post-secondary degree. Nearly a third of those will require training beyond high school, but not a four-year degree. In Washington, degree and certificate attainment have not kept up with the workforce demand, and many of you in this room know that. You live it every single day, and that's why you're here. In fact, the mid-level skills shortage in Washington state affect thousands of businesses across five sectors, maritime, manufacturing, healthcare, construction, and aerospace. And that relevance gap I was just talking about may cost our kids the opportunity to work in a job they love that supports their family and builds healthy communities. Next year, there will be 50,000 unfilled jobs in Washington. The vast majority of those will be in high-skill STEM and healthcare. An organization founded on opportunity and equity sees the real possibility of having more of both when we close our skills gap and build that bridge to a prosperous future for our kids. The second reason we have to do more should probably be the first, and that's a moral imperative. Nearly 45% of our kids live at or near the poverty line. That's almost half of our kids that won't achieve their dreams, and for whom poverty, which is a soul-crushing, life-dream-killing experience, takes away the opportunity for them to build a future that they can believe in and be proud of. Keeping our kids in school, celebrating their assets, personalizing their education, nurturing their skills, and growing the relevance in their learning will help build that bridge out of poverty and truly make education the transformational experience that it should and could be. So when students understand the practical use for math and science and other subjects, they persist in school. They complete their degrees, and they're ready to hit the ground running with their newly learned skills. And this is where I could make a Packers joke, but I've already lost invitations to holiday parties, so we're just going to let that one go. We would also do well, and I think this thank you. Thanks, Eric. Oh, shush. Give me a break. Can't we all just get along? It would be better if we moved to the AFC. You know, we would do well by ourselves and by our kids if we valued technical degrees and apprenticeships in the same way that we do our academic degrees. They require essentially the same foundational or baseline skills, and yet we sometimes look at one as if it's the runt of the litter. And that runt drives our economy. That runt builds a middle class. That runt is what saves our bacon in hard economic times, and it's what gives our kids hope for the future. And it's time we looked at these things in a different way. By the time my son is ready for the job market, and I'm 4,000 years old, nearly half of all the folks in the trades will have retired. You think of all of that opportunity blended with all of that need that we have for our kids, and you can see a match. You can see a match that creates strong families and communities and that builds the foundation for an economy that is stable and that fuels our education funding, that solves the crisis for education funding, and that provides for equitable, stable, and ample funding. See, these things fit together. We like to think of them as compartmentalized because an us-them environment in a political world is what we're really comfortable with. but it takes us. My son, this last weekend, I said to my son something I say to him pretty much every weekend, which is, hey, Max, we need to clean your room. And Max said, Mom, you always say we, but it's my room. And I said, but it's our house. And what we do together is what builds our house. So we need to clean your room. It's still dirty. Yeah. Bringing this thing back full circle, I want to give thanks. There are a lot of people in this room who've been doing the work to build a bridge to a prosperous future for our kids, and to find the meaning and relevance for them so that they stay in school, that they persist, and that they are able to build that bridge to a meaningful future. These include, and they're not limited to, the following folks. And if I've, you know, I hope that I don't forget any of you, but if I do, know that all of our work, the us, is a meaningful part of this, and you're all in the us. So the Washington Business Alliance I mentioned earlier, Washington Roundtable, Association of Washington Businesses, Manufacturing and Industrial Council. You know, by the way, Dave Gearing at MIC, the Manufacturing and Industrial Council, if we had half of Dave's enthusiasm, this thing would be solved. It would have been solved yesterday. We'd be doing something new, and he'd probably find it for us. Our community and technical colleges are leaning in so many places. They're leading the way, and our four-year schools are working hard to expand opportunities for more of our students to build that bridge to prosperity. I just want to say one more time, thank you. Thank you for being here this morning. Thank you for your commitment to our kids. And thank you for being a part of us. No one of us changes much. Together, we can change everything. And the one thing our kids need is everything. Thank you.